This is CliffCentral.com.
This show contains adult content. If you find it offensive, please go to the CliffCentral.com website where there's a show for you.
CliffCentral.com. It is 3 minutes past 10 on Friday morning. This is Sex Talk and Radio and Scripted. And of course, this morning we are most definitely and without a doubt uncensored. Interesting morning we are having, and we're going deep into the world of HIV and AIDS. 1st of December is World AIDS Day. So we are building up to that this week and next week. I'm talking to some very interesting people this morning. And a few minutes before the end, we're going to put men on the carpet. It's not often I get to a point of anger and frustration and everything else where we need to put some men on the carpet. So that's what we are going to do towards the end of the show.
Is it a real man on the carpet?
No.
Oh, it's a person.
It's a saying.
Okay, so explain to the stupid people in the studio.
But men on the carpet means that we are putting them here and pointing a finger at them and wagging the finger and giving them a little bit of what for.
Woohoo, like people in the world?
Real people.
Real people,
okay. Doing real things.
Good.
So beyond that, it is a wonderful morning. And we're saying good morning to Dr. Kevin Reeby. Morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Kevin.
Oh, I have to turn on the Skype. Now I have, and now I've put the volume up. Morning, Kevin.
Good morning. Oh.
And thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
So, morning, Tamar.
Good morning. Good morning, Kevin.
Morning, Lisa.
Good morning, Jonty. Good morning, Kevin.
And Anastasia.
Good morning, everyone.
Okay, so we've made Kevin as loud as we can. Kevin, are you with us?
Yes, I'm.
He's still in the world of internet.
Okay, disappeared. In the meantime, let us do this.
Ninja Sex. Chocolate Starfish. Twitterback. Calipagian.
Today's dirty dictionary word is
ablutophilia. Today's dirty dictionary word is ablutophilia.
Dirty dictionary word.
Any clues? Anybody? Any guesses?
That sounds like a really dirty one. I'm going to apply logic to this and say it's when you get turned on by going to the ablution facilities.
Yeah, you're not kind of that far away. So we're kind of more in the line of thinking clean. So join our conversation this morning on
0861-555-189, or you can message us to screen on WeChat. You can also catch us on Twitter, sextalk_CliffC, ErosLifeSA, and Lisa the Lesbian.
And for those who like accents, another beautiful, beautiful real sex story from across the sea in Ireland.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yay. Okay, Lisa's like, ooh, a man talking about sex. Delicious.
He's got a nice accent. I don't mind it so much.
Okay. So Kevin doesn't have a great deal of time, so let's kind of jump into this. Kevin, what's the bigger picture of HIV in South Africa at the moment? I know that's kind of a really broad statement. Are figures going up? Are figures going down?
Yeah, so I think it depends what population group you're really talking about.
Okay.
The figures from 2014 are that there are about 6.8 million people in our country who are HIV positive, so living with HIV.
Okay.
And that means about probably 19%, more or less, of our population are positive. And of that, about 3 million people, or just over 3 million people, are already accessing life-saving antiretroviral therapy through state structures. If we look at sort of heterosexual generalized populations across the country, we find that more people are getting onto treatment these days than are becoming newly infected. So you could interpret that to say that the new infection rates are in fact down.
Okay.
But when you start looking at specific high-risk populations, so these are key populations that have specifically elevated risks for HIV, and I'm talking about men who have sex with men and other gay men, perhaps prison populations, groups of sex workers, perhaps even immigrants with poor health access. When you look at those sorts of groups, the tide has not yet turned, and the rates there are still going up.
Okay. Is that connected in any way to not having access to treatment?
I think it's a multifactorial problem. So definitely access is not great for some populations. And you can imagine, yeah. You know, if you're a sex worker, to walk into a general state clinic and to actually disclose your behaviors is a pretty brave thing to do.
Absolutely.
Because the fear of being stigmatized is very high, and it may cause a lot of people to avoid care. So that's one factor. The other factor is, I'll use the example of gay and men who have sex with men, is because the rates in that community are already higher than in other communities, if you're a sexually active individual within that community, you are more likely just statistically to meet a partner who is already HIV positive. So the exposure risk is higher.
Okay.
And then the last thing to think about, to talk about it in the morning, is to get to the issue of anal sex. Because just biologically, the risk of transmitting HIV through unprotected anal sex is about 20 times higher than the risk of transmitting it through unprotected vaginal sex. Okay. So there's a biological factor as well.
Okay. Why is that?
It's got to do with the anatomy and the physiology, so how the vagina and the anus are structured and how they function in the body. So the vaginal lining is a thick lining. It's resistant to tearing, and it contains what are known as goblet cells, mucus-producing cells. So essentially, the lining pre-lubricates before sex. And that isn't true of anal tissue. The lining is a lot thinner. It doesn't self-lubricate. It's much more likely to or liable to be damaged during sex. And, of course, if that lining becomes damaged and a person is exposed to virus, there's an easy entry point.
Mm. Okay. So the most important factor in, or one of them in any kind of anal sex is incredible amounts of lubrication.
Tons and tons of lube. And I mean, we obviously highly recommend condom use for this particular sex act because of this high transmission risk.
Okay. Okay. Is that the main reason that gay men are at much higher risk?
Yeah, you know, so the myths out there are quite widespread. So you'll hear people say things, well, gay men have more HIV because they're more promiscuous. Hmm. I mean, that's the sort of myth we've got to be careful about because there are a lot of gay men out there who are promiscuous. There are a lot of straight men out there who are just the same.
Absolutely.
So there might be a behavioral component in the type of sex that people have, but I would really put it down mainly to the biological factors of anal sex and to the sort of community factor that the virus is already common within people that you might meet for a sexual hookup.
Okay.
You know, I think it's really interesting to think about this because a lot of these key populations that I've mentioned, prison populations and others, these are bridging populations. So, you know, somebody who's in prison and has a high rate of HIV acquisition there is eventually going to be released. And, of course, that then translates that risk back into prison. And then for men who have sex with men, we know that in South Africa, a lot of guys who have sex with other guys don't identify as gay. They identify as heterosexual.
Yeah, we've been talking quite a lot about that recently. Yeah, carry on.
So a lot of the guys that we see in sort of ANOVA Health Institute and Health for Men practices, these guys are bisexual. They have male and female partners. And, you know, if they acquire HIV from a liaison with another man and then they have a whole lot of female partners, of course, they just translate that risk back. So there's been quite a lot of work done in the research world, particularly at Johns Hopkins University, where they've looked at the effect of what you do as a country. if you put all of your HIV efforts into the generalized population, you will get a response and you'll get a reduction in the HIV rates.
Overall population.
Overall, yeah. But if you put efforts into that general population and you concentrate on these sort of targeted high-risk groups, you get a much better effect overall.
Yeah.
So and so I think the push really is to consider this as a slightly more nuanced approach, that it's not one size fits all. You need programs that are appropriate to wherever the risk lies.
Mm. And is our government, is our health department actually doing that?
So the answer to that is yes. I mean, South Africa is in a very fortunate position. We have a very enabling constitution to allow these kinds of programs to proceed. And the issue of covering key populations is actually included in the country's national strategic healthcare plan. And it's included in quite a number of the provincial strategic healthcare plans as well. Now, what government has done is to partner with a number of nonprofit organizations like ANOVA, which have the skill to do this nuanced key population work.
Mm.
So I think there are strong programs. I could argue that they should be expanded and should be a lot stronger. But we are taking the lead in the African continent in terms of human rights and medicine, and in terms of contributing to, I guess, groups of people that don't necessarily get looked on as favorable by general society.
Because often there's quite a big gap between what's in the constitution and what is practically happening on the ground.
So I think that is absolutely true. We do have to recognize that people have their own ideas, prejudices, and preferences.
Yeah.
And that may not align with what's in the constitution for sure. And we're aware that there's quite a lot of homophobia and stigma coming out of health facilities. So the kind of programs that are out there to try and mitigate that or reduce that are things like facility-based training in gender and health.
Mm.
So organizations like ANOVA and Health for Men, I know that TBHIV Care does it, the Desmond Tutu organization does it, FPD, there are a whole host of them that actually do training in state facilities where everybody in that facility, from the doctor down to the nurse to the security guard to the cleaner, are really sensitized into the types of different sexualities and the types of people that might be present in that clinic. And it's sometimes very simple things. You know, if a sex worker walks into an HIV clinic and the receptionist rolls their eyeballs at them because they're judgmental about their behaviors, we've often lost that person, and they
Absolutely.
Just will not be retained in care.
Yeah.
So I think there's two things to be done. The first is across our medical platform, we need to be working on sensitization to different sexual orientations. We need to be working on values clarification so that clinicians and supportive staff actually understand their own preferences and are not prejudiced against others.
Mm.
And then I think there's also a need to increase skill levels across these platforms, because the truth is a nurse who qualified 5 or 10 years ago, before the MSM and other key population issues really became prominent, may actually not have been taught how to do a proper anal examination or, for example, how to look for STIs in the anal area that could increase HIV risk.
Mm.
So they need those skills.
Okay. On a slightly different tact, diseases change and mutate, and very often they do that in response to the treatment that we throw at them.
Yeah.
How much has this virus changed over the years?
So, I mean, HIV is a chameleon. It really is. It changes itself slightly with almost every copy that it makes of the virus. So it is a very mutatable virus, and that's been a problem in treatment programs.
Mm.
Because if somebody starts taking antiretroviral therapy and they take it correctly, so the pill taking is really good, the virus will never get a chance to actually copy itself, and it therefore can't change its genetics and become resistant.
Mm.
If somebody's on treatment and they're not managing correct pill taking, the virus escapes slightly, starts to copy itself, can make genetic modifications, and essentially escape and become resistant to those ARVs.
So every time it kind of changes and mutates itself, is it becoming stronger?
Not necessarily stronger. It's becoming different. So,
okay.
For example, some mutations might be beneficial to the virus. I'll give an example. If somebody's on an ARV called tenofovir and the virus can mutate itself that it no longer is affected by tenofovir, that's a beneficial mutation. But there's always a cost to pay for that virus in making that mutation. And sometimes when it does it, it actually becomes what we call less virologically fit. So although the virus is able to escape from a drug, it may not be able to copy at its full potential. Okay. So somebody who has that particular strain may actually have a lower amount of virus than someone who has an unmutated wild-type strain. So I think it makes it different. It sometimes makes it stronger. It sometimes, well, fortunately for us, it makes itself weaker by mutating its genes.
So the stronger a person's immune system is, and the more immune-boosting healing that they're doing as well, the more effective the treatment's going to be?
Well, treatment has, I agree with that. Treatment has two main goals, but maybe more than that. From a truly medical perspective, and just to be very reductionist about this,
yeah.
Once somebody goes on treatment, we expect to see an elevation in their CD4 count. And CD4s are basically the soldier cells of the immune system. So the more they are, the stronger the immune system is, and we can measure it. So that is the one goal, is boosted immunity. The second goal is to completely suppress the virus to an undetectable level in the bloodstream. And we measure that by doing a viral load. So if I wanted to be really reductionist about this, somebody who's going on treatment is expecting to see a raised CD4 in the immune system and a suppressed virus as dictated by an undetectable viral load. That's the medical side. The other side is things like avoidance of HIV symptoms, a reduction in the risk of infections like TB, pneumonia, and meningitis. So I think there's a whole string of different goals, once somebody's on therapy. One of the things that I guess you alluded to a little earlier is the more antiretrovirals you use in a country program, the more resistance you are likely to get over time. And we see this from the antibiotic world. And I think everybody's aware, because of a lot of use and sometimes overuse of antibiotic, we have bacteria that are now becoming more and more resistant, yeah, and more difficult to treat. And if you look at a country like the US, where they've been using ARVs at scale since probably the mid-90s, I would suggest that about 10 to 15% of HIV infections there are already resistant to one or other ARV before a person is ever treated. And that's simply a the length of time they've been used. In South Africa, that figure is about 1%. Over time, it will go up.
How do we combat that? Is that there a way?
That is basically drug development.
I can't hear.
So new agents that are coming along.
Just 1 second, Kevin. Just 1 second. Let's try it again.
Okay, so we're going to get... Okay, so we will get Kevin back in a minute. In the meantime, Whitney has joined us from Mari Stopes. Nice to have you back here again.
Thanks for having me, Jonty.
That's very cool. I keep saying I haven't had you yet. It's kind of my little thing.
And
you
it's
know,
just politically
it's like
correct.
When somebody says, yeah, do you know somebody? And you say, well, kind of in the biblical sense or not. Okay. What's your take on all that?
Look, I think Kevin has put it across very succinctly, yeah, and very comprehensively. Really, the thing that we have to understand is that HIV is multifaceted. It's a disorder that affects the immune system, but it affects families. It affects an individual's capacity to work. It affects their access to healthcare. It affects everything. And I think definitely there is, obviously there is some epidemiological merit in fixating on these key populations who are at higher risk. But we do need to balance that off with this idea that AIDS is a gay illness. HIV can affect anyone.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we have to break down that stigma because it really is responsible for a lot of the suffering that this illness causes.
Yeah.
Just to look at the stats in South Africa, when you look at 2014, that's just, we're going to put it on the podcast page, 2.4 million kids. Children are staying without parents. This is definitely not, this is a number that is completely disturbing. We're talking about families, we're talking about household. This is all affecting South African society, obviously.
Yeah.
Well, so it is, sorry, I just need to cut in because it is a disturbing figure, but it's a little bit misleading because one of the other advances that we've made is a reduction in the number of children who are born carrying the virus.
Yes.
Because previously, if the mother was positive, it was a given. that the child was going to be congenitally positive. And we've actually managed to reduce that transmission figure through a very intensive prevention of mother-to-child mm-hmm. transmission program. And, of course, the flip side of that is that a lot of these children are immune competent and they're surviving, but the mothers who have had HIV, who've gone through the rigors of pregnancy with the infection, are not necessarily as healthy, and some of them do leave these orphan children behind. Mm.
So, Kevin, are you there?
Yes, I'm back.
Okay. Interesting question, because we've been talking quite a lot about key population, and quite a few times prison has come up. Are there any idea of the numbers of prisoners who are HIV positive?
So I don't have those figures at my fingertips, but just generally, all the studies that have looked at this have always shown a higher rate of HIV in prisoners than men in the general non-incarcerated population. Mm. So I think it is, you know, I think it is fair to say that we would include them in this group of higher risk populations.
Okay.
You know, I was just listening to the last speaker about some of the gains in the mother to child and the orphan issues, and I heard the comment about this isn't just a gay disease, and I can't stress that enough. I think that is a perception we have to fight really hard against. We've got to make sure that this is promoted or projected as an equal opportunity virus. Anybody who is sexually active or is exposed to a body fluid with HIV is susceptible. And work that has been done looking at the spread in populations in South Africa shows a very different population to the US between key populations and general population. So in the US, they have predominantly a type of HIV known as a clade B virus. If you look at the epidemiology, how that spread, it probably did, it did originate in gay men. And there was probably introduction from that community into heterosexual communities in the U.S. When you look at that in South Africa, most gay men in our country have what's called a clade C virus, which probably is a heterosexually modified virus. And it tends to suggest that in this country, the predominant method of spread was always heterosexual. Huh. And that many bisexual men may have been infected through their liaisons with women, rather than the obvious assumption that it was their male partners.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah. Kevin, just on that as well, I mean, we've been talking a lot about gay men, about straight couples and that. There is a myth that you cannot basically get this from woman to woman. Is that true? Because I know I've only ever heard of one or two cases where HIV has been transmitted from female to female partner. So how often is it that that is actually the case?
I think it's a magic question, and it's hard to give an answer. But the reality is it definitely occurs. There are multiple case reports. They get presented at academic conferences. There is some data out there to show that women who have sex with women are still at risk. You know, I think the myth is that those women only get HIV from men, and it occurs in the context of often sexual assault. But I don't think that we can make it that simple. Women do transmit. Mm-hmm. Maybe a good way to think about HIV transmission is to think about it, again, quite biologically. I'm sorry, I'm a scientist, so I keep coming back to the simple sort of science terms. Rather than try and link it to a particular type of sex or person, is simply to go down to the basics that say, in order to transmit HIV from one person to another, two conditions need to be met. The one is that a potentially infectious body fluid needs to be transferred from the positive person to the negative person. And the second thing is that that body fluid must have sufficient HIV virus in it to establish a new infection in the new person. And if those conditions are not met, then transmission doesn't occur. Mm-hmm. So if we think about an example of a woman who has sex with women, if there is potential transfer of vaginal fluid that contains HIV, that could constitute a transmission risk. If we're looking at a man and a woman, you know, if a man is positive and his wife or partner is negative, and he exposes her to his ejaculate fluid, to his semen, and there's HIV in it, that's how transmission occurs. And that's essentially how condoms work. You're putting a barrier that prevents the transmission of the body fluid. It's also how treating positive people lowers the infection risk when they're sexually active. Because if you can lower the amount of HIV in their body fluids down to undetectable levels, then they're highly unlikely to transmit because there's simply no virus there.
Okay. Kevin, thank you. This has been really, really wonderful, and we are deeply appreciative of your time. And I will send you the link to the podcast of the show.
Great, fantastic. Thank you, and great to talk to you.
Oh, thank you again. Thanks, Have Kevin. A wonderful
thank
day.
Bye, so Kevin. Thank you.
Well, this is complex. I mean, it's not a simple thing.
It's
yeah,
very
that's
complex.
That's why we go to med school for like what,
a million
six?
Years.
So, yeah, I mean,
well, yeah, we wonder about
me
that.
Old,
we wonder about that and what
you
actually
you
do.
Look,
look
great
I bunked most
another
of
story.
It.
Yeah.
You know,
and you
I
still managed to pass it, which makes us wonder when you walk into a doctor's office, what the heck are you getting
well,
behind
pass
the desk?
Marks are 50%. Remember that.
Yeah.
But I did. I bunked a lot of med school. I bunked the day on treating patients like. Lab results instead of human beings. That gets me a lot of flack.
Yeah.
I bunked the class in understanding that there's like psychosocial issues. That gets me a lot of flack. I'm a terrible doctor.
Well, as long
so
as
we're all not
that,
going to see you
yeah,
in
as long as you say that up front, then it's easy.
Yeah, Lisa, it's time for your PV exam.
My what?
It's overdue.
Time for your pap smear, time for your pelvic exam.
So what I'm really wondering, right?
Yeah,
is
no, don't deflect this question.
It's not a question. There was a statement.
Yes,
there was a statement, right?
Yeah,
there wasn't a question.
There
we
go.
Okay, so it was saying, when are we making the appointment? That was the implication underneath it.
New.
Oh,
well, what's up?
Now, would that
stock?
Be an
exactly.
interesting
I was going to say,
scope?
Has a pap smear ever been done live on internet radio?
Oh,
it
no.
has
oh,
not.
No,
yeah.
No,
well, there
no,
we go. So we can plan for that. There we go.
Somehow I think the rating is not going to be that great.
I have an idea at my just be if we include a cervical orgasm oh with it.
Wanking of your cervix at
there
your service.
Go. There we go.
Okay, that's so what I really was wondering
yes,
about this
let's
whole age
intelligence.
Oh. Okay, it's what does the Constitution say about you having to disclose to other people? So I'll tell you, so obviously this whole topic came up about the whole Charlie Singh thing coming out and now saying that he's HIV positive and some of his partners coming forward saying that he never informed them that he was HIV
yes.
positive, right? Even one of his co-stars in one of the shows that they never had a sexual encounter, but they were just kissing. So what does the Constitution say about this, Whitney? I think you can probably help in terms of if I'm starting to date someone, at which point, I'm assuming that before you have sex, but do you have to disclose if you're protecting or, and if you don't disclose and I contract it from you, can I sue you? So there's a lot of angles to this.
Sounds
question.
Like Whitney's a lawyer.
Yeah, Whitney, you're going to have to think about that one
yes.
for a minute before you answer because...
You can watch porn, or you can just listen to the real sex stories.
Okay, so we have a slight delay in that. But it's fine, you guys are off air. So you can talk quietly amongst yourselves or do whatever it is. Take your clothes off, put them back on.
Taste of you. I have kissed your mouth and tasted the sweetness of your breath. I have tasted your desire and the fire of your passion on my tongue. I have kissed your skin and tasted the warmth of the sun. I have tasted the earth and the crystal drops of sweat on my tongue. I have kissed your breasts and tasted the softness of your giving. I have tasted your nurturing and the power of your love on my tongue. I have kissed your sex and tasted the mystery of you. I have tasted the fruit and the flower, the essence of woman, on my tongue. I have kissed your tears and tasted the hurt of your heart. I have tasted the bitter salt of your pain on my tongue. I have kissed you and tasted the ocean under the wind. I have sipped your nectar into me and tasted your beauty on my tongue.
Alrighty then. Well, not in HIV Awareness Day, maybe. Then I won't suck your tasting. But yeah, usually.
Well, make your own choices. Then.
Well...
Okay.
I would like to be informed, like Charlie Sheen should have informed.
Okay. So what's the story? Do you know the answer?
So Britney's not a lawyer, but
Whitney.
Give us the
Whitney.
Sorry, I just said Britney. I was thinking of Britney Spears there for a
baby
second.
One more time.
What a horrible thought.
You're talking about HIV, I'm just saying.
Baby one more time.
I
this is not
had.
The BDSM episode, Ma.
Okay.
Damn it.
Okay. I'm relaxing.
Okay, Whitney, over to you.
Okay, so the Constitution...
Whitney, face, mouth, microphone, contact, almost. There we go.
I was looking at, I couldn't help it. I had to look at her. Okay. The Constitution does protect a person's privacy. They do not have to disclose, but it is obviously something that we encourage people to do because the more open and honest you are with your partner, whether they are, it's a discordant couple, one is positive, one is negative, then the better you are at practicing safe sex and helping to keep the negative party negative. So we do encourage people to share this because then you know you have to use protection. Kevin was just talking about viral loads. There are times when the viral load is low, and you know that especially applies to people that are trying to conceive and they are discordant couple. But yeah, so it is the stigma that hinders a person from being honest from the get-go. But once you're starting a relationship, go and get tested with your partner. You know, that's something that we encourage. And protect. Use protection. Use condoms. Dual protection. If you're on a contraception, use condoms.
Okay, but by law, basically, I don't need to disclose.
No.
That sucks.
Well,
can I just becomes, say officially?
You know, it becomes quite fascinating because if you look at the world and you hear so many stories of, I'm not quite sure of what word to use, so let's use victims of certain crimes, of certain incidents, actually being persecuted and prosecuted for protecting themselves in various situations. You know, like somebody breaks into your home, you shoot them, you are charged.
Yeah.
So the bigger picture is, have we gone too far in terms of kind of personal protection in so many things?
I think it all depends. What is the risk? If I work in a certain place and I, let's say I'm a nurse, of course they need to know if I'm HIV positive.
Yeah.
If you work, you know, if it's all, it all depends. I think we should look at.
Yeah. So our medical workers, do they have the same protection?
No, usually it's about a contract. That's what I, when I investigate the topic, you go to work in a certain place, then they are telling you if you want to work in that place, you have to inform. It's written in the contract and they're obliged to tell you you are committed to tell them if you have any any STD or STI or anything like that that can be transmitted by touch. So some kind of different exchange of fluids.
Well, in some overseas countries, if you basically give me HIV, I can sue you and you'll be charged with either attempted manslaughter or attempted murder or something.
So here's an interesting question. If you knew that a doctor was HIV positive, would you go to that doctor?
No.
Probably not.
The worst thing I can say, but that comes up to mind. I'll rather maybe go to the one that there's no 0.001% that something will happen. But obviously, doctors do a lot of examinations that require usually touch.
Yeah.
Well, it depends where they are. But
yeah, well, they use gloves.
Yeah, but that's, well, that's a good question.
So I just want to turn the tables on you there for a sec tomorrow.
Please do.
You walk into the doctor's office and he or she does not necessarily know if you're HIV positive or not.
They are way more exposed than me, that's true. Yeah.
And if you were openly HIV positive, do you think it would be okay for that doctor to say to you, I don't want to treat you as a patient because there's a risk?
He's obliged by him being a doctor to treat everybody. That's what he took as a job. And because of that, he actually protects himself when he put gloves and masks and whatever. But there was a big case about a nurse that got infected in HIV. And in the end of the day, she sued the specific person that they were supposed to say. They were supposed to inform and they haven't. And yes, it is a big risk. We all need to, first of all, take, it's a good question. Are we taking our own responsibility of our own health? Are we really? And it starts with, you know, when you meet a partner.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry if I'm not, you know, I'm not a doctor, Anastasia. That's why I'm happy we have this discussion here.
No, I understand. Yeah. And I think it's an important discussion to have. What I really want to get at is that kind of attitude that we talk about, and I'm not saying I don't understand why you would feel that way, but that is the stigma and that is the prejudice.
Absolutely right.
And that is just, it typifies the kind of adversity that we deal with inside society, because as long as we think that people who are infected are untouchable, then there is a very serious problem.
Yeah. And that is the reason that they don't disclose their statuses, because they don't want people to be scared of them and to change their attitudes towards them.
Yeah.
And I think in our society, that stigma goes so much deeper into things like, if you knew a man was gay and you were in the gym change room, would you change as openly as you would normally do? Because the perception is, just because he's gay, he's looking and he's interested and wants to seduce you, have sex with you.
Yeah, well, that's very arrogant as well to
think that you are that attractive.
Absolutely.
That everyone wants you.
Yeah.
And yeah, Lisa makes a very good point. I mean, how often do you get that?
I get it often, but I never ever walk into a gym and go, oh yeah, free for all.
Yeah,
I don't even notice the other naked woman there.
You don't go in
there
to check people out. It's like this whole bathroom thing. You go in there to do your business. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, and who really cares anyway?
So, by the way, how many people that are just really pervy go into go to the beach or go to wherever? Yeah. This is not a problem of being gay or not being gay. This is a problem of how do we respect ourselves and one another. Mm. That's for sure.
Yeah. Interesting thing. How, and we're putting this out because it's a really big and deep question in terms of consciousness. How much of this is linked to the consciousness of our world, to the guilt, the shame, and the embarrassment about sex, about pleasure, about our bodies? And for me, that's such an important issue.
That's a really important point. And I mean, I'll prove it here. I'm sure if you think back, you can remember just when HIV was still being discovered and coming into the mainstream. And then people had been receiving blood transfusions, and obviously the blood had never been screened for HIV. And it turned out that some people did contract the virus. And the kind of rhetoric and narrative that went around that was, I'm HIV positive, but I got it from a transfusion.
Yeah.
I got it from a needle stick. I got it from whatever it was. You know, as if to say, don't paint me with the same brush.
Yeah.
I didn't misbehave. I'm an innocent victim. And obviously the implication of that is that sexual behavior is not innocent.
Mm.
And that's the problem.
Mm.
And again, we know the issues. I mean, obviously, and it is my role as a doctor to kind of sit here and say safe sex is important.
Mm.
And it is. It's paramount. But we know how difficult it can be for people.
Yeah.
And we know the kind of pressures that there are. I mean, often one partner in a relationship will bring out the condom, and the other partner might even react violently.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not safe.
Whitney, you have numbers about what's happening with partners, with condoms. Because in Marie Stop, you also deal with abortions, of course, and health, sexuality in a healthy way, in any aspect. Please give us your take on it.
Okay, so my take on it is power dynamics and relationships. That plays a big part of it. If you look at the stats, teenage girls are 4 times more likely to contract HIV than boys of their same age.
Why?
So that then brings out the question, are they having sex with older men who also have a high prevalence rate, who then refuse to either use protection, refuse to go get tested with their younger partners? So it's a power dynamic. A lot of our young girls are unable to negotiate the use of protection in their sexual lives.
Mm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Huh. Yeah. It's such a deep and wide-ranging topic. And how much of what we actually know is myth and how much is real? How many of the numbers that come out are actually real, or how much of them do we know? Because when we spoke before, for example, about the idea and the numbers of abortions and terminations, we actually don't really know what's going on.
Yeah.
Because so many people are going for procedures outside of the mainstream.
True.
So we actually don't really know. Is HIV the same?
Well, do you know where our statistics come from?
That's my question. Where do they come from?
We can tell you where they come from.
They come from the clinics and the hospitals.
Yeah. Yeah, but how do you know the prevalence of HIV in this country?
Exactly. There's so many
because
under the radar.
You have to give permission to be tested, don't you?
Absolutely right. But the fact that you've given permission to be tested doesn't mean that you've given permission for that result to be recorded somewhere. And what I'm going to tell you might surprise you, but the way that we track HIV infections is through pregnant women.
Mm.
Because as part of routine antenatal testing, they come in and an HIV test is done. And those statistics are reported anonymously and extrapolated in order to reach figures that we hope are representative of the entire population.
Would that include private hospitals?
Generally, it would. Obviously, you have to give consent for any kind of testing, but it all falls under the same banner of maternal health.
So anybody who goes to a private hospital essentially would be tested as part of that?
Yeah.
We have the HSRC, which is the Human Sciences Research Council, that does this research every 4 years. So the last one that they did was in 2012. They interviewed 38,000 people in South Africa, and only 29,000 agreed to be tested for HIV and to have those results
numbers
published.
Numbers are very different than what we think.
Yeah. So those are the numbers that we then go by.
So we're kind of swimming in the dark with a lot of this.
Well, look, I'm not a statistician. I'm not an epidemiologist. Definitely the people who come up with these figures don't suck them out of their thumbs.
No.
And they're a lot smarter when it comes to what they do than I would be. The point being that it's never going to be a perfect estimate.
Yeah.
So we don't know with 100% certainty, but we try and approximate as best as we can.
Mm.
I think what it really comes down to, and those figures that Whitney has just spoken about, really illustrate this, is that people are still afraid. And until we get people in a position where they understand that being tested and speaking up about the results, or especially just letting them be collected anonymously for data purposes, is not something that we need to be afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as we keep telling them that they should be, we're not going to overcome that.
So what comes to me is, how much of the fear of this is actually the unknown? That a lot of people simply on their own don't understand what it actually really is. It's never kind of been put in a knowable form. Like if I hold up a bottle of water, you can kind of have an idea of what this is.
Well, I think it's a good point, but I mean,
it's this like nebulous thing inside your body. What is that?
Look, in the roughly 30 years since we started learning and understanding what HIV is, things have changed dramatically, and we don't understand the illness perfectly. We don't understand the virus perfectly, but we've got a much better handle on it than we did before. The point that I'm making is that the information is out there, but people are scared to access it. And that's why there are questions like, you know, is it possible for a woman who only sleeps with women to contract the virus?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not that the answer isn't out there. It is out there. Mm. All the information is out there, but no one's going to ram it down your throat.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you're part of that generation who's already completed their basic education and that kind of thing. You know, unless you empower yourself to learn about it and to understand what kind of behaviors are risky, what can I do to minimize the risk, how can I be safe, then you're not going to pick it up from anywhere else.
Mm. After a story like Charlie Sheen, a lot of people, a lot of youngsters, people that, you know, follow ETV or whatever, people, whatever, all the shows about, sorry, ETV is for something, all the entertainment channels, they want to know more. Okay. The question is, are we, when we want to know more, where do we go?
So that's a positive coming out of the whole thing.
Yes,
you're
exactly.
Saying.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know, he's not the first celebrity to reveal that.
But he's the first celebrity to make such a scandal and to make such an issue of actually being so irresponsible about it.
So we can draw something positive from it, because
we have to be very careful with the interpretation of that message, because again, there's a lot of shifting of responsibility and that shame is coming out. Like, you know, really, I think it's very unfair to say, to blame it on the sex workers, for example.
Mm.
And
who's blaming it on the sex workers? Is that he blames?
Yeah.
Okay. Either the sex workers or the gay men.
Yeah. Well,
that's the stigma around it. It's either sex workers or gay people.
Yes.
It's never heterosexual people. It's never your average Joe or Jane on the street.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly the thing. And that's why I like to say that when it comes to sexual contact and HIV, behaviors have certain risks associated with them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, anal penetration by a penis has a risk of X.
Mm.
Vaginal penetration has a risk of Y. Cunnilingus has a risk. You understand what I'm saying? So it's not about gay men. It's not about sex workers. It's not about anything except the behaviors. And those behaviors can occur between any two individuals.
Mm. Of course.
So what we are doing during the week in preparation for next week's show is we are going to do an interview with Dr. Cindy Funzel, who does the health show on the station, and we are going to ask her the various ways that this actually is transmitted, so we can actually answer a whole lot of questions that we've received over the last little while to say, how does this actually, and if I, what are the chances of?
Yeah,
and
spoiler alert, it's not from sharing food, and it's not from sneezing, and it's not from sitting in the same room as someone who's HIV infected.
It's not from touch from a doctor.
Absolutely right. It's not from being in the same taxi.
But this is what we need to know. And
We need to start from basics. Because sometimes it gets to also younger people.
Yeah.
They haven't heard, they don't know.
Yeah. So linked to the fear and the guilt and the shame and the embarrassment around our sexuality, today is?
Today is the Transgender Day of Remembrance. And it happens on the 20th of November every year. The week that precedes it is called Transgender Awareness Week, where mm-hmm. we try and bring some attention to some of the issues that transgender people face. But ultimately, what's important here is that transgender people are often victims of hate crime. Mm. And the best figure that I have for this year, and this came from GLAAD, is 271 people have been murdered, transgender people, around the world. And we know that that figure is an underestimation. We know that there's a lot of misreporting. We know there's a lot of deaths that we just simply never hear about. And we know that there's a lot of people who take their own lives because of societal pressures and all kind of prejudice and discrimination that is still very rife. So today is a day to remember those who have lost their lives. And these were people's friends, people's family members. A lot of them were young. People filled with potential, just trying to live their lives in peace and not be in a constant struggle with their own identity. So I think it's just very important that we bring it out there and we make people understand that it's not so simple as saying, oh, it's cosmetic endeavor and whatever it is, Caitlyn Jenner, all of that. You know, there's a lot of transgender experiences that aren't all sugar-coated and rose-tinted.
Mm. So important.
Yeah.
Thank you, Anastasia.
Absolutely. And I'm just going to shamelessly plug, there is a nice video clip that I've posted on my Twitter. It's on my Facebook page if you want to learn more. I'd really appreciate that.
Remind us your Twitter handle.
My Twitter handle is Anaphylaxis. That's with a U at the end. It's very shocking. And I think you can find the links from some of our other tweets on Sex Talk.
Okay. So we've got a question, and we are going to look at the answer quite quickly. A question is directed at Anastasia. With all due respect, but what does Anastasia have? A penis and a vagina, or what? I'm trans too.
Wow.
And I am shocked and flabbergasted.
First, we want to know what's the length of your penis or deep depth of your vagina.
Wow.
And we would like to see a picture of you as
and
well.
We actually, the first time that we spoke with you, we actually did ask that.
Yeah, and what did I tell you?
And
I said it's none of your business or anyone else's.
And there we go.
I mean, tomorrow, what is the diameter of your cervix?
So. Yeah, well,
I don't know. You're going to measure mine, apparently.
There we go.
I would actually that like you,
science.
Doctor, to check me. But yeah, that is such...
And that's the answer.
Yeah,
there we go.
So the point is that it's really quite a rude question to ask people about their genitalia. It doesn't just apply to trans people. And it's always, I always turn it back on people. You know, I say it's really inappropriate for me to ask you about what's in your pants or what color it is or what texture. And there's some people who are happy to talk about it, but I don't have a right to that information. So I will not answer that question. And I will, if it's asked again, I will give you the same answer.
Fantastic.
That's so nice and politically correct. Wonderful. That's beautiful.
Time for men.
Time for men on
the
carpet.
Time for men on the carpet.
And not Charlie Sheen, because I don't
Charlie
understand
Sheen.
English,
no.
Apparently. Because Whitney, we do want to ask one more question before we end the show.
So here's a fascinating thing. Over the last couple of months, so many couples have come to me more on the prompting of the man that there is a problem in their relationship, and it's a sexual issue. So the men want to go and explore more of their sexuality. Either they want to get into swinging, or they want to heal this. But so much of it is her problem. And if she were healed and changed, then everything would be absolutely fine. So what happens is this. Women embark on a journey of healing and growth, and they heal some of the stuff from the past. There's no question that female sexuality is much more shamed in our society than male sexuality. So women start to get more in touch with who they are, with the power of who they are, and the beauty of who they are. This comes out, and all of a sudden, these men go into this absolute terror-stricken panic, and they put all their insecurity, all of their guilt, all of their lack, all of their fear onto their partner because they cannot deal with the power of a woman.
Maybe they expected like a sex doll just to be like a porn star, to just stay there. That's what would become, stay in the room with high heels.
So I want to tell you guys, more times than not, the problem is yours. It is not hers.
Oh my goodness.
And
I didn't see Jonty so angry for a long time. Jonty, what happened? Tell us the story.
No, I'm not sharing the story. Okay. But we don't have time. We'll come back to
we'll
it.
Come back
because we are going to do a full show on this.
Woo!
Absolutely.
All righty then.
Because this is where so much more suppression happens, because this little fire starts to grow and you think you're the fuel, and all of a sudden you tamp that fire down.
Tame it.
Guys,
if you want a sexual healthy woman,
you have to be sexually healthy yourself.
Exactly.
And this is where it comes, because these guys say, this is not my problem. It's her problem. And so many times, it's not
we
her
are all
problem.
Sitting in studio it's and we are afraid.
Yours.
We are afraid.
It's yours.
Okay,
John. So much of our sexuality and so much of our sexual freedom comes from us men not owning that within ourselves.
Amen.
Okay. Guys, listen carefully. Take note.
Okay.
There we go. If you want to ask Whitney a question, you have 1 minute to ask. Okay. So
Whitney,
go for it.
If you have to speak to the future generation, because you see cases and cases of real people, as Anastasia say, real people, lives just being taken away, or quality of life has been completely, let's say, at least to say the least, disturbed, and you know, life will never be the same. If you can give us and talk to the future generation, what would you say?
I would say empower yourselves with take control of your sexual and reproductive health, whether it's getting a pap smear, whether it's getting tested for STIs, whether it's getting tested for HIV, using contraception, using condoms. Just take control and protect yourselves. Let's just be smart about our sexual lives.
Yeah. We had supper on Monday night together. You said something amazing. If you do not have time for your health,
I forgot. You'll have to remind me.
Yeah. She was drunk. She can't remember.
Yeah.
If you do not have time for your health, you will have to make time for your illness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For your disease, for your
dis-ease,
yeah.
For your discomfort.
It's about holistic care. Take care of everything and you'll be okay. So
yeah,
just empower yourself. Take control.
Whitney is giving some of the best advice that anyone will ever hear, and I'd urge everyone to pay attention to that.
Contact Marie Stopp. They can give you a lot of wonderful tips how to deal with your sexuality, with your health, and how to get help.
Yeah.
Contact Anastasia for a pap smear.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a cure. Get in line.
A blutophilia. A blutophilia is a fetish for baths or showers that centers around naked people lathering themselves or others up. I think it's just so damn fucking sexy.
So that's basically two people showering together.
Yeah, but really getting turned on by it.
Okay. I had a guy like that and I didn't like it. I felt like he thinks I'm dirty, which I am. It's fine, but he just...
Okay, I think you've been showering with the wrong people.
Okay. Yeah, this small. This small.
There we go.
Couldn't
you've been showering
it.
With the wrong
water.
People. That's
sorry.
What we have fingers and
sorry.
Tongues.
I'm really sorry,
for.
But showering the sex is not fun. Okay.
Yeah,
okay, it's not as sexy.
You don't know how.
No, it is not as sexy as people make it out to be.
Yeah, in movies, they're like...
Jonty, you're going to teach me then, because I'm telling you now, in a bath maybe, yes, in a jacuzzi, yes, in a shower, it's fucking uncomfortable.
Jonty workshop, what are you going to do this week?
We will teach that. So we don't have a workshop this week, but we do have next Saturday. One of the most beautiful, powerful, intimate, exciting, it's just mind-blowing what you can learn in a couple of hours. Sensual and erotic massage.
Mm.
It is so intimate. It is so exciting. And one of the biggest things is so many people say, we don't know how to touch. And we don't know how to be touched.
Mm.
Information on www.eroslife.co.za. Please continue with your questions and your comments and your messages. We are so appreciative of them, and we love the contact with you guys. Thank you so much.
Tumisha will join us, by the way, for the AIDS show.
So next week we are going to continue this. The more human side of AIDS. What happens in a relationship after diagnosis? What happens?
Yeah.
What is the emotional impact? What is the physical impact? Where do you go after that? We'd love to hear your stories. If anybody is in that situation and they would like to come on the show, you are more than welcome. Please contact us in the week, because we'd love to hear and we'd love to share your stories.
And join me tomorrow in the Meslo, please, in the Mr. Cliff Central finals. It's going to be the 12 finalists of Miss South Africa, and the boys of Cliff Central, please join me. Please come and help.
And Casper Rasper is up next, and it is his birthday today.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. All these cool people.
If we had time, we would sing for him, but we don't.
It's the dog's birthday. It's not his birthday.
Is it the dog's birthday? Oh, no, you're joking.
There we go. So, wish the dogs happy birthday. We wish you all so much pleasure.
This is CliffCentral.com.